How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay them, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King, locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hey there, welcome to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for downloading us, making us part of your daily routine, whatever it is that you're doing, driving to work, going to the gym, going for a run, or cross-country skiing through the snow that we all got. Whichever it is, thanks for downloading us on a daily basis. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales, Jay King, here after the Celtics took care of the New Orleans Pelicans and are on a bit of a roll, Jay. These guys are hot, and what a game Marcus Smart had against the Pelicans.
Yeah, when he shoots the ball well, he's so good. And first of all, shout out to whoever is cross-country skiing while listening to us. That'd be
awesome.
I've never cross-country skied.
Neither have I. I'm all downhill.
Yeah, I feel
that describes so much of my life.
I'm not a downhill skier either. But anyway, Marcus Smart is probably a downhill skier and probably a very dangerous one. he likes
no
to live
poles,
on the edge.
Just tuck and roll, baby. Just go. No helmet, just fly.
Yeah, that was one of the best games of his NBA life, I would say. I mean, when you put together the shooting, he had some great passes. Buddy Hield couldn't even drive to the into the paint. Buddy Hield was going absolutely nowhere against Marcus Smart. There was no chance he could get past Smart. Smart was just dialed in defensively. He had that one possession against Anthony Davis where he forced a miss down low. He had the other one where he switched onto Davis, snuck around him and stole it, and then went coast to coast for the bucket. It was just a mighty, mighty performance from Smart. And as we said, like, when he hits shots, he's so good. And he's hit shots lately. I think he's like 48% over his last 8 games from the three-point arc. So we might be in for our semi-annual Marcus Smart explosion from the three-point arc. I'm not ready to say he has found an outside shot, but he is at least hitting outside shots lately.
I know. This is like last year. It was after the blizzard.
It's always the snow, man. If it snowed every day, Marcus Smart might be like a 65% three-point.
Something about the snow. But, you know, I think Marcus is – there might be something different about this one because Marcus isn't shooting the same shots that he was shooting all last year and at the beginning of this year. The heat checks – well, except for last night. Last night was a little crazy, but
That and 1-3 was
it was a little crazy. But he's slowly getting away from heat check Marcus, where I thought early in the game he had an opportunity to take a couple of shots that he normally would have taken. Instead, he drove and passed. So I like where his head is at and where he's going, and I think he's understanding a little bit more that. In this role, now last night, again, a little bit different because Avery Bradley was out. But when they're fully healthy, he is the primary backup point guard. He is more of a distributor. This is the most solid role that he's been in for the Boston Celtics. And I think he's responding with a more consistent game, a more, at least on offense, more measured game. He's not taking six or seven threes per game. Again, last night, aberration. He's normally been taking through December about three, a little more than three three-pointers per game, which is great for Marcus Smart. And so if he tones it down a little bit and takes the right shots, like I looked it up, he's shooting over 50% from both corner threes. That's huge. So if he can kind of work into the rotation, find himself in the corners, catch and shoot from there, then he's going to be so much more effective than the Marcus Smart we've known in the past.
What's crazy is he went 5 for 7 last night. We're recording this on Sunday morning. He went 5 for 7, and it increased his shooting percentage from like 29.1% from three to 31.1%. Like, that's how small the sample is this season, I guess, and that's how much it helps when he gets hot. So right now, if you take out all of his heaves, and obviously he is the master of the heave,
yes,
the king of last second flings. It's unbelievable how often the ball finds him, and he never fails to get a shot off before the buzzer. But if you take away his heaves, he's actually shooting 33.3% from the arc this season. And obviously, you know, if he was doing that the whole season, you'd be happy with that. That's just about league average, or at least it used to be before everyone learned how to shoot. So everyone's just blazing hot this year. But, I mean, if he can shoot 33% to 35%, whatever, then that's good. That's really good. And I do think his shot selection is starting to come along. I do think it helps that he's playing point guard. I'm not convinced that's solely it. Like, even when he's playing off ball, he's handling the ball a lot. He's getting opportunities to run pick and rolls. He doesn't have to fire away. But I think he's becoming a little bit smarter about picking his spots. When they run the offense through him in the post, it's been a good thing. So Marcus Smart may be coming along. Obviously, the next step for him is learning how to finish and learning how to draw contact. He doesn't have the explosion of normal point guards, but he needs to be able to use his size. Like right now, according to basketballreference.com, he's shooting 43.9% inside of 3 feet. That is bad, 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 bad. So he needs to figure out a way to finish, and hopefully this 3-point thing can continue, sort of.
You never know. Look, there's one stat that I like that I think shows what this season, how different this season is for Marcus Smart. The two people who are assisting him the most are Al Horford, number one, with 17 assists on the season, and Isaiah Thomas, I think, has 14 assists to Marcus Smart this season. Those are the two top guys giving him the ball to finish. And those aren't necessarily all finishes at the rim. Those are mostly 3-point shots, which just goes to show that Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas are both drawing a lot of attention, and Smart is finding spots and getting good shots. So it's a little bit different than in past years. I think the Al Horford effect is real. I think that he's having a very positive impact on everybody's game. He's making the right plays, drawing the defenses out, and that's allowing Isaiah Thomas to get into the lane. And then when Isaiah Thomas gets into the lane, he's passing as well as he's ever been passing. So it's all intertwined. I always say situation matters, and this situation is really good one for Marcus Smart. So he's taking better shots. He's in a more consistent role. And I think when all of this combines now moving forward, assuming there's no trade, that I think Marcus Smart finished the year with actually respectable shooting numbers. So nothing great. I'm not going to pretend that he's going to be anything great, but I think he's going to at least get up to a point with his shooting that you can say, the defense that he plays.
Are you sure about this, John?
Yeah, I feel confident in saying this.
He's done this before. He's done this.
But it's different. I really do think it's different. This isn't Marcus Smart just getting hot. Last night was him getting hot. But I think prior to last night, the numbers were all trending in a very positive way for him. And like I said, the corner shots are falling at a very high rate for him. And the catch and shoot shots are falling at a pretty good clip for him. So in this offense, the way this offense is moving, again, with Horford and Isaiah Thomas, I think that Smart has found a little bit of a groove where he's going to at least be respectable. He's not going to be great. He's not going to be confused for any sort of knockdown shooter, but he's going to be that guy. Like you said, 34, 35% maybe. I think for Marcus Smart, that's going to be awesome.
I am not convinced. and the reason I'm not convinced is because Marcus Smart has done this before. Marcus Smart has gone on streaks, weeks, even like a month, where he's shot the ball well. His rookie season, like for the first half of the year, he was pretty, like really good from on catch and shoot shots. He hasn't been able to sustain it. He never has been able to sustain it. I do think, like right now, you're talking about, you know, his catch and shoot is really good. He's shooting 34.5% from deep on catch and shoot shots, which is like okay. But then you look at his off the dribble and it's 17.9%. And like,
right. He's not going to be Steph Curry out there, but I'm telling you, I will say this. When we go at the end of the season and look at his splits, January, February, March, April, I think when we look at his splits for the rest of this calendar year, I think his three-point shooting can get up to somewhere, like you've been saying, without the heaves, somewhere around 33, 34%. I think that he can keep that going.
Okay. That wouldn't be – I mean, that's certainly not out of the question.
League average, you know? Well, like we said, 34%, I think he can do that.
It's going to take a lot for Marcus Smart to convince me he is a reliable shooter or somewhat reliable. Like, he has gone through years of proof. He's given us years of evidence that he is not a good shooter at all. So he needs to prove it. Prove it to me, Marcus. Make them. Keep taking the good ones, too.
Marcus.
Shot selection has been trending upward for sure.
I like it. I think, yeah, and that's why. I think this streak is different than years past, but that's just me. Okay, the Celtics overall, though, are shooting lights out from three. And maybe Marcus, last night, Kelly Olynyk said the three-point shooting is contagious, more contagious than the flu, which is pretty contagious right now for the Celtics. But the Celtics have gone four straight games hitting 17 threes, which is topped only by the Houston Rockets, who did it five straight games, including a team record 19 threes a couple of games ago. Isaiah Thomas off the charts shooting. He's shooting 44% from three almost since returning from his injury. These guys are just hitting threes like mad, and they've needed to because they keep playing these teams. They play Philly, they play New Orleans, who varying degrees of ability there, but both have tremendous shot blockers clogging the middle. So they had to hit a bunch of threes to win these games.
Yeah, the Celtics defense has not been good. And they've masked it by, as you said, hitting a ton of threes. There has been some serious defensive slippage. And maybe it's just because they've been scoring so well that it's been like, yeah, whatever. Like we're gonna score enough to beat the 76ers anyway. We're gonna do enough to beat the Pelicans no matter what. So whatever. Let's just chill out a little bit defensively. Let's hit all these damn three pointers and let's win that way. But like if they're going to reach their potential, the defensive slippage can't be there. You know, they played the Pelicans last night and the Pelicans put up they scored throughout the whole first quarter, like had no problem scoring. Jrue Holiday was killing them. Anthony Davis, obviously, he's a monster, but he was killing them too.
He gave up 20 to Langston Galloway off the bench.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a shooter, but I mean, come on.
I feel like Langston Galloway always gives them buckets.
Yeah. I don't know.
He always gives them buckets.
They still gave up 108 points to the Pelicans, which is too many.
And the Pelicans have one of the worst offenses in the league.
So the defense, we're going to have to figure this out. And again, no Avery Bradley last night, so maybe that had a little bit of a factor. But, I mean, you had Marcus Smart. It's not like the starters did what they normally do. But Are we at a point this season where we're just going to have to understand that the Celtics defense is not going to be what it was last year?
I mean, maybe. If it's a weird situation. I think yes, we have to admit it's not what it was last year, because last year their defense was a force. Last year their defense was creating turnovers, turning into offense at the other end. Their defense last year was a locomotive. This year, it's definitely not that. I do think they can play defense a lot better. One thing to look at is the slippage of the starting lineups defense lately. And, I mean, they're still scoring, but the starting lineup has not defended at all. Actually, the last eight games with Isaiah Thomas on the court, the Celtics are giving up 116 points per 100 possessions, which is dreadful. And they're scoring even more than that because Isaiah Thomas has been ridiculous offensively. But like they really need to shore up some things with that starting lineup and start defending like they can. And it hasn't hurt them at all. They've won 10 of their last 12 games. They've shot up to the point where it's feasible Tuesday's game against the Raptors could be for number two in the Eastern Conference. But that defense, it is a little troublesome right now.
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. And they're 20th right now in the league in defensive rating, which we thought it was going to be flipped. They're 7th in offense, 20th in defense. We thought it was going to be flipped, that they'd be 7th in defense and 20th in offense at this point. But things are just different this year. And, you know, maybe they're still trying to figure out rotations back there with Horford rather than but look, last year they started to go off defensively around this time of year too. So it's possible that they're going to kind of figure something out and be better moving forward. But I think maybe we just have to understand that when your offense gets that much better, it's hard to be that great offensively and that great defensively. How many times have we seen players be great defenders, and then as their offense gets better, their defense starts to slip? Because you only have so much energy to expend on the floor. So maybe some of these guys
at the same time, like, defense should be easier when you're putting the ball in the bucket. If you're playing against teams in the half court, defense should be a lot easier. And over the last eight games, I think the Celtics are 7-1. They're 29th in defense over that span. Only the Denver Nuggets have been worse. And Denver's coach, Mike Malone, has been verbally berating his team after some of their losses. And meanwhile, the Celtics are just beating everyone, and they're just doing it by scoring more points. They haven't had a real blowout win. Last night's win was like their first kind of blowout, and it didn't even turn into being a blowout because the Pelicans kind of came back in the fourth quarter. But it was their first semi-blowout in a while.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the teams that they've beat, they had some nice wins over Memphis and Utah, the two top defensive teams in the league, but they didn't stop either of those teams. They've only, we'll go back, let's see, to the Charlotte game, they've only given up less than 100 points twice in that stretch. So they're still giving up a lot of points. I don't know, man. It's not something that's easy to pinpoint. You still have Smart and Bradley and Crowder, who are great individual defenders, but it's just different. It's just different this year. I can't put my finger on it why they're just getting beat, except to say that they're playing so much better offensively that, like I said, you only have so much effort that you can give. There's only so much gas in the tank, and sometimes I think guys might relax a little bit on defense because they're running so hard on offense. It just might be a slippage.
That's a cop out, though. They got to play better defense.
Well, of course they have to. But look, we've seen it. We've seen it millions of times. Great defensive players start finding their offense, and their defense starts to slip because they rest on the offensive side of the floor, and now they're not resting on the offensive side of the floor. Avery Bradley, a lot more offense is running through Avery Bradley. So he's not just kind of hanging out and cutting back door all the time and just getting overflow offense. He's running off of picks. They're running sets for him. You know, human beings, they only have so much energy. That's how it goes. So sometimes on defense, you're going to get a blow by where he had in the past some opportunity to slide in front of a guy. It's not how it's going to go all the time, but look, I think there's a little bit of that going on.
And look, like we're showing the pessimistic side right now. Like the Celtics are scoring against anybody. Like they smoked the Grizzlies, the top defense, twice. Mm-hmm. They smashed the Jazz, the second ranked defense at the time. They decimated the Pelicans, who have turned into a top 10 defense this year. So, like, it doesn't matter who they're playing. Isaiah Thomas is getting buckets, 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 and the Celtics are hitting a ton of three-pointers. It's just how it's going. And I looked at this, like, right now, only two teams in the league, the Cavaliers and the Houston Rockets, have made more three-pointers per game than the Celtics. Who would have thought that the Celtics would make more threes per game than the Warriors so far this season?
That's nuts. That's nuts.
That's crazy.
And remember,
they're up to seventh in three-point shooting percentage. This is a top offensive team right now. One of the top, probably like top five offenses, I would say, in the league. Right now, they're ranked seventh, I think. But considering how they've trended over the last month and how they've done it against whoever, doesn't matter, good defenses, bad defenses, they are scoring against anybody right now. So, I mean, this offense is turning into a powerhouse. And Isaiah Thomas, I mean, he had 38 points last night. It was like it wasn't even one of his better games. As Brad Stevens said, he's like, yeah, it shows something about how well he's played that you guys didn't even ask about him until his fifth or sixth question, and he had 38 points on 13 for 24 shooting. And it's
right.
Like, whoa, he had 17 points in the fourth. He had 38 points total, and it was like an afterthought because that's just kind of what he's been doing.
Yeah, Celtics have put up 110-plus points in their last eight games. Yes, eight games in a row. And then prior to that, it was 109 and then 112 in the overtime game against Grizzlies. So they're scoring. They're averaging over 110 points for their last 10 games, if we want to put it that way. So lots of points going up on the board. I wonder how sustainable this is. I mean, Brian Robb had a great tweet last night about Isaiah Thomas in the 12 games since his injury. 31.5 points per game, 6 assists. He's shooting 51% from the field, 43.5% from three, and 94.5% from the line. How sustainable is all of this? Is this offense going to come back down to earth? Is that defense going to get a little bit better? Is it going to combine where, you know, maybe they're not scoring as much, but they're not giving up as much and they're still going to win? Hard to say, but
I could promise they're not going to shoot better than 50% from the 3-point arc like they have over the last four games for the rest.
That's
of
a safe
season.
Bet. That's a safe bet.
I suspect that'll drop. I do think Isaiah's, I mean, he's averaging 28 points. He's doing it super efficiently. He's fourth in the NBA now in scoring. That's sustainable. I don't know whether his current shooting percentages will stay the way they are the rest of the season, but he has proven himself as one of the league's best scorers. I think Horford might be due for an uptick shooting wise. I think his shooting numbers have been down for a while. Crowder, Bradley, those guys have become good shooters. So this is just a really good offensive team. I'm not sure I expected it to be quite as powerful as it was. I knew the addition of Horford would help. I figured internal development would push the Celtics forward further. But this is really just a beastly offense, right? It's fun to watch them play, and they just share the ball. They get open shots. I was on the radio yesterday, and somebody asked me whether the Celtics should be shooting so many threes. Hell yes, they should be shooting so many threes. That's what they do. Thomas is the only one who can get to the hoop consistently. He's the only one who can draw free throws. But he's good enough at it, and Horford's good enough, and he's good enough facilitator that they can work around that, and they can work around Marcus Smart in the post, and they can find guys open for threes, and three-point shooting right now, that's what this team does. That's what this team is built to do. That's what this team, that's how this team is going to succeed. So hell yes, shoot as many three-pointers as you want. Keep firing those things.
Bombs away. Yeah, look, they're hitting at a pretty high rate. Obviously, like you said, not gonna be at this rate for very long, but still, they're pretty good. So might as well just start firing away. That's today's NBA. That's what it is. Threes and layups. So, all right. Well, we'll see. That Tuesday game against Toronto is going to be a big thing. If the Celtics lose that game, we're going to hear a lot of people say, look, we're good, but we can't beat the good teams. And I don't want to hear that. I really don't want to do that. I would like them to at least go out there and beat Toronto. And then this way we can kind of put the can't beat good teams narrative behind us. So,
I mean, how many times do they have to beat a good team for that narrative to change? Like, they beat the Grizzlies twice. They beat the Jazz pretty handily. Like, how many times do you have to beat a good team for that to be a thing? Obviously, they've been bad against, like, the top teams, like Cleveland, San Antonio. Yeah. They played Toronto without Isaiah. Like, obviously, they haven't had, like, wins against... That's something that's overblown, man. If you look at history, and studies have shown that net rating, not how you do against the top teams, is the more indicative of how a team does in the playoffs. So I'm not worried about, doesn't matter what happens to Toronto, I'm not worried about the Celtics playing top teams and their record against top teams. I'm more worried about the defense and whether they can shoot back up the defensive rankings, because lately it's been bad on that end. And they've gotten away with it because, wow, Isaiah Thomas has been great. Wow, they're hitting a ton of three-pointers. But you can't stay that bad defensively for long and win a lot of games.
Right. Look, the people driving that narrative of can't beat the good teams are the people who don't understand that Memphis is a good team and that Utah is a good team and don't realize that those guys had the top two defenses in the league. They also don't look at a team like Golden State, which has lost to San Antonio, Memphis twice, and the Rockets. So they can't beat good teams either, quote unquote. But you're not going to hear a lot of that stuff coming out of Golden State Warriors land. But you're right. The net rating is a bigger indicator. But I would like for people to just shut up about the good teams thing. People see Toronto as one of the good teams, our competition in the East, in the division. So beating them would be huge. Okay.
It would be nice.
It would be nice. Let's wrap this up with the Mystery Machine, which we didn't get to last week. We'll just kick off this week with the Mystery Machine. Jaylen Brown bought a Mystery Machine of some sort over the summer and wants people to go for a ride. So we weekly pick five guys to go for a ride in Jaylen Brown's Mystery Machine. So let's start it off. I think I go first this time. And I'll just throw out one of the obvious names. Let's get the obvious names out of the way. Marcus Smart, after last night's game, I'll put him out there. Again, I love the way he's playing. I think he's trending in a positive way, and I'm bullish on Marcus Smart, who is a bull on the floor. He's like a 6 foot, 4 inch, 220-pound pile of cinder blocks. He just
I'm not convinced moves he's only 220, man.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He's listed at 220, but he's just a big solid piece of humanity that moves his feet so well that it really is like trying to get through a brick wall sometimes. Watching those guys, watching Hield and Davis trying to bull their way past him, he's just the immovable object. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like trying to drive past like closed elevator doors. just not happening, guys. Sorry, buddy, you got no chance. Isaiah Thomas, obviously, he is just scoring and scoring and scoring and scoring and scoring and scoring. So, Isaiah, you're on there. Well, welcome back. I think he's been in the Mystery Machine almost every week.
Yeah, he's getting like a a permanent seat in the mystery machine. How could he not? How could he not? And I'm going to say, I'm going to give Amir Johnson a seat in the mystery machine because he had a low key, really great game the other night. And I think he's been asked to go up against Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis. He's had a lot of tough defensive matchups. And obviously Anthony Davis had a really great game last night, but I think that Amir Johnson has done all right, and he's played some solid defense, and he's done okay. And not a lot of stuff that shows up in the box score necessarily, but I think he's done okay. So I'm gonna give him a seat. We don't give him a lot of seats in the mystery machine. And I think this is a nice little recognition of the effort and the not box score type stuff that he does.
Al Horford.
Yeah.
If you make 4 3-pointers in a fourth quarter, including one that holds off, staves off an upset against the 76ers, you're in, man. And his shooting was really, really bad against the Pelicans. He did not put the ball in the basket very well against those guys. But I thought he still made a difference. Like they ran the ball into him, threw him in the post early in the third quarter, and they kind of worked that to pull away a little bit in the third. So I'm going with Al Horford here for the game winner mostly.
Okay, that's solid. I'm gonna go a little off the beaten path here for my final pick. This is kind of our wild card pick.
Okay,
I'm going to say Terry Rozier for the fifth spot in the mystery machine because
that might have been my pick.
Good. Hey, all right. A lot of DNPs, you know, kind of phased out in some respects, but here he is, comes in last night, makes some really great individual plays, scores a little, rebounds. He had that one amazing rebound, that tip in where
that was awesome.
He's everywhere. He loves to rebound. And I think, look, a couple of assists, a few rebounds, a steal for a guy that has been phased out in some respects to come in this game and in the Philly game. He had positive impact in the Philly game.
I thought he saved them against Philly. They were floundering, and Terry Rozier comes in, picks up Stauskas full court, gets all up in his shit, starts to make Philly a little uncomfortable. Then everybody else came to life a little bit. So
yeah
I thought Rozier, especially considering the DMPs, he brought it once he got in the game. Like he really brought a different energy level in that Philly game, and then again against the Pelicans.
That's the big thing for me, that after a bunch of DMPs and seeing his role change, he didn't get down on himself. He didn't lose a lot of confidence. He came out there and gave some really solid minutes, some high energy, did some really positive things. So those are the little things that could be the difference between wins and losses in tight games like that. So Terry Rozier, welcome aboard the mystery machine.
Welcome, Terry. We appreciate your efforts in limited time.
So, all right, that is it. We'll be back tomorrow. We want to thank you again for downloading us on a daily basis, subscribing to us. If you haven't subscribed to us, if you found your way to us for the first time, welcome. And please subscribe, rate us 5 stars. Go out there onto iTunes, rate us 5 stars. That helps us spread the word. It helps us get a few more listeners. That gets a couple more advertisements out there. And we're happy to do this without charging anybody to download a podcast. But that, you know, we need a little bit of money in our pocket. So the 5-star rating is kind of like paying us for these podcasts, which we do every day. So
pay,
check that.
Pay that man his 5-star rating.
A little early for you to be drunk, huh, Jay?
No. Anytime I can come with a completely out of the box Rounders reference, I like to do it.
Love it. Love it. All right, that's the show. Thanks for listening. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales. Locked On Celtics.